Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One. Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, a very riveting account of the Battle of the Bulge in World War II from someone who was there. Our guest is 94 years old, and he fought alongside of General Patton at the Battle of the Bulge. So we'll talk to him, one of the last few guys who can really talk about World War II. First, I'll tell you about Madison Reed Mister. Now, Madison Reed has been around, and they made great products for women, and women can color their hair. And at some point, they went, well, let's make it for men. Why not? Blend that gray in. It's natural looking. You can do your hair, beard, and both. You can go onto their website and see before and after shots. No shoe polish look. It's just a little more pepper and a little less salt. That's all. Madison Reed Mister makes it easy to find the color. Again, you match it up on your website. Lynette and Gina love this stuff, too. So for the men and for the ladies, quick and easy. Just apply the gel to your dry hair, then the activator, and just rub it in. Let it sit for 10 minutes and shampoo it out. It's Madison Reed Mister, right, Dawson?
Go to MadisonReedMister.com. That's MadisonReedMR.com. And use code Adam10 for 10% off, plus free shipping on your first box. Again, that's code Adam10. Adam Carolla's I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, navigating our all-woke, no-joke culture, has over 1,000 five-star reviews on Amazon. Here's one.
Carolla always put out too much production, and this is certainly no exception. Definitely recommend the read.
Thanks, Ozzy. Pick up I'm Your Emotional Support Animal now. Available in all formats. For more, go to AdamCarolla.com.
World War II veteran, 94 years young, Frank Sisson is on. The book is called I Marched with Patton, a firsthand account of World War II alongside one of the U.S. Army's greatest generals. It is available October 20th, but you can pre-order it now on Amazon. Frank Sisson, you there?
I'm right here.
Oh, man. Well, thanks for your service and thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You joined at age 18 in 1944. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
I don't know how many living World War II veterans there are, but there cannot be many of you guys left because you'd have to enlist very young and close to the end of the war as you did, right?
Well, yeah, that's about right.
What do we know what the count is? Do you go to a convention every year? Do you keep track of people?
No, I don't. There's not very many at all. And I guess I'm in good health, and I've always been in good health. So that's what I count for my longevity.
Brian, yeah, sorry.
I see they're estimating about 300,000 World War II veterans survive to this day. It's an estimate, of course.
Wow, that's I'm actually surprised that it's 300,000. That feels like
300,000.
That's what the computer says.
The Pew Research, yeah.
So, did you enlist in 1944? You go to the European theater and no.
Yeah, I went to Fort Sill and volunteered for the United States Artillery.
And you start off with Patton, or where do you go at the beginning?
I started out with Bradley.
Oh, Bradley.
Yeah, I was in the 1st Army. Then when Patton wanted a barrage of artillery, I went with Patton. And I'm glad I did. And I think General Patton was the greatest general the world has ever seen. He had a bad mouth, but he had a good job killing our enemy.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what you're looking for out of a general. What was your artillery? What is it? What equipment? What was your weapon?
Our weapon was 155 howitzer, and they're a very, very powerful weapon. The Germans have an 88 caliber. We had a 105 and a 155, which we outnumbered them in artillery. And we could keep like 6 or 7 rounds of artillery in the air before the first one hit the ground. So when they put up an artillery barrage, it was powerful.
So the first one would launch, and you could get the shell out, put in a new round, launch that one, and do that times 5 while the first one was still in the air?
That's right. That's right.
What was the range on something like that?
Well, those were about 15 miles, 20 miles most. But the biggest range was 25 miles. That was a 155 howitzer. And it was a powerful weapon.
You know, it's a crazy statistic, and somebody can look it up. But when it comes to those projectiles in the military, I think a battleship can fire a 2,000-pound round back in the day like 25 miles.
Yeah, right.
Meaning it's essentially like taking a VW bug and launching it from Glendale, California, and having it land on the Santa Monica Pier and be able to do it over and over and over again.
Well, the artillery barrage that we had, our general, Patton, he wanted to make sure. So he lined the artillery up, and they all had a sequence to fire. And they fired, and they fired, and they fired. The first night, my outfit fired 25 of those big rounds in one night's time. 25.
What? So how much ground did you cover with Patton? Where did you start off?
According to the spotter, we would put an observation point up like some as high as point we could find, and we fought within that perimeter until we could see we weren't doing any good, so we'd move up a little bit and do some more and some more and some more, and until we just aggravated the Germans to death. They didn't know where the fire was coming from. Consequently, that's how we won that war with it.
How?
We won that war.
So I think we've all seen the George C. Scott version of General Patton with the pearl-handled revolver and the side holster and everything. Obviously, you've seen that movie. What was the real guy like compared to that Hollywood's version of him?
More down to earth. yeah, the Hollywood version is, he would stand up there. He stood on top of that one mountain in Hollywood, and he looked down in the valley and saw all of the action that was going on in that valley. And Patton said, "Oh, God, I love it." Well, that was not Patton. Patton really didn't love war, but he knew how to handle it. And he fought with every ounce of strength he had, and he wouldn't send his men into any war or any area that he wouldn't go himself.
I believe this is just a piece of trivia that I have in my head, but and it's sort of how life works. Patton, after all these battles, dies in a Jeep accident. I think he died in a Jeep accident, like literally after the war. Like, just here you are, Germans and machine guns and bombs and artillery and everything. And how do you die? You die in a Jeep accident after the war. Like, that's how life works. We're always so worried about the big stuff. And I don't know. You can look that up, Kalen, but I'm pretty sure he died in a Jeep accident shortly after the war. Or Frank, you must know.
Frank, give him your opinion of what really happened.
I'm not in a position to do that.
Now we have to know.
Is there a conspiracy theory here?
Well, let's put it this way. The truck that did the damage, they never did find it. They never found that truck.
Really?
So the truck that hit him.
Where is that big 18-wheeler?
Oh, so is the theory that somebody wanted to get rid of him?
Oh, I wouldn't. I don't know about that. That's the opinion. I have no evidence to that.
But there was a significant feeling that the Russians wanted Patton dead, and that was an element that circulated as part of it. My name's Robert Wise. I'm part of writing the book. That theory was a significant theory later after the war.
So what was the story of him dying in the Jeep? And I'm sure the Russians wanted him dead. Why wouldn't they? They'd probably want everyone dead after the war. But
it was a headache as far as opening up new fronts. And once he told Eisenhower, you give me a couple of weeks and I'll make these SOBs think they started the war.
Is he talking about the Russians at that point?
Yeah, he hated the Russians. And I don't blame him. I didn't have much love for him myself.
So when was it? When was, sorry, Robert, but what do you know about Patton dying after? Was it very shortly after the war had ended?
It was, I don't know exactly what day he died, but
it's December 8th, 1945, which had to be right at the end of the war.
The war was completed. He was in a hospital. They flew his wife to the hospital, and Patton was essentially paralyzed from the neck down and lamented with his wife that here he was in a bed. This is where he was going to die. And not very long after that, he just passed away.
Mm.
I read his book. Patton wrote a book on the whole war, and it was part of the discipline that he received for some of the comments he made. They sent him off to Austria. He wrote the book, and it's an interesting book to read. I'm not sure there are very many of them around anymore, but it's his picture of what happened, how he reflected on it, and how his final thoughts were recorded.
So Battle of the Bulge, that was the big one. What are your recollections of that, Frank?
Well, it was the Battle of the Bulge is listed as the greatest land fight that ever was, and there's over 100,000 killed in that battle alone, and it was bloody, and besides that, it was sub-zero weather. If the enemy didn't shoot you, you froze to death. If you're lucky, you were able to stay busy or wear. I had on every piece of clothing I owned, and I was still freezing. So
tell him how what the temperature was.
70 and 80 below zero.
Oh my Jesus!
If you can imagine a deep freeze that you buy your ice cream at is 10 below. Well, this is 80 below. That freezes your freezer. So, and the cars, trucks and stuff got transmission froze. And we had to order in some battery wraps to put around the transmission so that vehicles could keep moving. And the artillery shells, we had to back off because the gun barrels were turning white from us firing it so much. And we just fire every other round, every other gun would fire while the other was reloading. That way it kept the temperature down on those guns. And they didn't melt. They made out of solid stainless steel, but you could keep pouring the lead to them and they'd melt the barrels of the guns.
Where would you, you also have to remember, this is long before any, you know, synthetic materials. It was like wool and leather. And they didn't have the stuff they have now at the REI.
No Gore-Tex.
You had blankets and stuff. Like, where did you sleep? How did you sleep?
Well, we had a bedroll, and the bedroll was like wool, and it was very uncomfortable, to say the least. And you never undressed. I never took my clothes off for 42 days. I never took my boots off 42 days.
You didn't take your boots off for 42 days.
Boots on, and I'd sleep with all my clothes on. And you mean I got to go out and lay this telephone wire in this temperature? I'm about to freeze my bums off as it is.
How sad is it that the Battle of the Bulge, this arduous, decisive, bloody battle from World War II, is now, I think most people today know Battle of the Bulge from like morning TV shows, like, New Year's is over. Are you fighting the Battle of the Bulge?
Yeah, I know. That's sad. That is sad.
It's extremely sad.
So, Frank, how did the Germans... I guess you would learn sort of, I mean, you know, how the Germans fought. How did they fight? Was there a way they fought that felt different? Or, I mean, I think of them, like, I think of their equipment is very good. The Panzers were very good. The Tiger tanks were very good. Like, they had, you know, as you could imagine, the Germans had really good equipment.
They had good artillery and good machine guns. They had the very tops in the equipment, but so did we. We had really top-notch artillery, and we would fire artillery into the German camp, and the Germans would go to the bomb shelter until the firing was over. But it didn't turn off for 42 days. We shipped truckload after truckload of ammunition in for the artillery rounds. And the Germans that we took captive were almost insane. They said, "You guys never stop. That pounding, that constantly, day and night. And it just drove the Germans nuts and crazy. And so they wanted to turn themselves in and get a good night's sleep and some food.
How many did your battalion capture Germans, and how did that work if you did?
Well, somewhere in the neighborhood of 10,000 captured German soldiers, and that Battle of the Bulge was a pathetic battle. There was dead bodies laying everywhere, and farmyards. I saw one motorcycle with two riders on it, sitting in a frozen lake, and both of them were just tipped over in that. It was just pathetic, you know. Shell after shell after shell, and then banging and banging. And the guys couldn't even get out of their foxhole to go to the restroom. They couldn't get out of there to get them something to eat. They just had to live in that mess.
Gina, you got a question?
Yeah. So I read that you were among the first American soldiers to liberate Dachau, the concentration camp. And, we learned so much about that in school and much of at least my Jewish childhood, this is sort of just something that we just are inundated with. But I've never spoken to somebody who's experienced that firsthand. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yes, ma'am. We were coming around the side of the mountain in our truck, our army truck. And my driver, he said, Frank, I think there's some action going right up there. And we looked and he said, yeah, there is. And I said, let's go check it out. The war was about over, so we weren't worried about getting shot or anything. But we needed to check that out. So we go up there, and sure enough, it was a concentration camp. And I asked the man in charge of it, can we help you? And he said, yeah, pick those guys up and put them in the ambulance because we're taking them to the hospital, and don't feed them anything. Don't give them anything to eat. You can give them water out of your canteens, but don't feed them because their stomachs can't take it.
Right.
They haven't had anything to eat in several days, and they're starving to death, and any food in their stomach would cause them all kinds of pain. So we went over and picked this 80-pound man. Excuse me.
It's very hard to talk about this. My uncle was in Dachau concentration camp, and written several books about that experience. And it's It's almost unbelievable that any human being could do what the Nazis did.
Well, we went in and started picking these little, this little 80 pound man up. He was 7 foot tall. This guy was a big, big, big guy. He's almost seven. He's like 6.5 feet tall anyhow. Easy to pick up and carry him over to the ambulance, and they'd take him to there and put him in a bed. And I tell you, it took months to really get over the sight of seeing such skinny, bony people. I don't know how they stayed alive. And I really don't. We didn't lose them. Everyone in that compound, we took them to the ambulance and they carried them to the hospital and put them on rations, and they all lived according to
them. Wow.
Wow. So they
unbelievable.
Were, they kept trying.
I couldn't sleep very good for several nights.
Well, and it shows too that there's no amount of time that can pass that can ease the pain of those memories.
They don't leave you. They true. Don't leave you.
And I never shared any of this with my children at all. Not this.
Yeah.
Not this.
So that was after the Battle of the Bulge, and what then? Where did you go? When did you come back stateside after that, or were you stationed in Germany or somewhere else?
I had a choice. I could stay with that unit and be a liberation unit, or I could. They wanted to send me to Berlin as a detective in the military police, which I look forward to doing it. So I took it and really enjoyed it, except for the Russians, the blasted Russians. I tell you, I don't know. God had a day off when he made the Russians, I guess. I don't know.
Tell them what they said about the worst in America.
I tell everybody that the worst GI in the American Army, the sloppiest, the misdressed, and the whole thing, he could be a general in the Russian Army.
Wow.
And,
well,
I think I'll share that. I had one. I think it was the military police on their tour. They brought a Russian general in to headquarters. And he wow. and his driver both were intoxicated.
What?
Really? And I told the guard, take this driver down, put it in the slammer, and we'll take care of the general up here. It's as a courtesy to the German, to the army. And he didn't like being treated like that, so he picked up a wire basket and started beating the clerk over the head with it. And I grabbed his arm and spun him around, and him being drunk, he went clear back to the back of the room, and that back room was brick walls. And I said, "Oh, thank God for brick walls, because if I had to shoot it, my weapon, this wall would protect anybody in this building." I grabbed the Russian. And I looked, and he was going for his pistol. I thought, "My gosh, man, you're in a." I said, "Frank, you can't kill this guy in here. In MP headquarters, everybody in your hometown's going to know it." And I said, "What am I going to do to myself?" And it's amazing how fast your brain can work. And it said, "Shoot between his legs, and if he still comes up with that pistol, shoot him dead center. I'll give him that break." Well, I threw the shot between his legs, and he threw the pistol as high as he could throw it. He started screaming, "No, no, 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 no!" in Russian.
Yet.
And upstairs, or the jailer came running upstairs. "What's going on? What's going on?" And I said, "The idiot here drew his pistol, so he came down, throw him in the slammer. He'll call his folks to come get him." And the guard took him out of that water he was standing in and took him on down to the jail and locked him up. And they came after him. And by the way, while they were putting him in the back of the truck, they tore the bars off his shoulders. They ripped all of his insignia off and everything off his sleeves, and they took all of his nominations away from him. They didn't know who he was anymore, so I don't think he made it home.
The notion, you know, you think, I always think about these ideas, like I sort of think about, oh, we'll have a drinking fountain for white people and a drinking fountain for black people. And you go, how long could that idea last? Like, how long would that? East Berlin, West Berlin. We'll take Berlin. We'll put a big concrete wall through the middle of it. We'll have machine gun nests there. And then we'll just have part the people live over here and the other part will live over there. Like, first off, I can't believe that kind of stuff goes on as long as it went on.
It went on for a long time.
I was
gone home by then. I wasn't in that area. I was there before the wall. So all I know is that the regular German people were nice to know, and they weren't responsible for that war. The Nazis were responsible for that war, and they paid for it.
Yeah, and the Soviets were responsible for the wall. Which, again, I don't know how that ever could have worked.
The president told him to take down this wall.
Yeah, I think Hasselhoff played a key role in it as well. I don't know if you're a big fan. So you then return home. What year do you come back to the United States?
45.
And after?
46, I guess, yeah. I'm a year older, so I don't know.
You've seen a lot of death and a lot of things that a lot of people shouldn't see. Does it affect you when you come back to the United States?
Not now. I can handle it now. But there's times at night I wake up and I'm thinking along that line, and I get up and drink some milk or something, and I go back. I'm 96, 95 years old. And I've been married for 74 years, so to the same wife, incidentally.
But I'll tell you that for 50 years I've known Frank, and it was only in the last 3 or 4 years when we started working on this book that I looked up on the wall and I saw the plaque to the Battle of the Bulge, and I said, Frank, what is that? He said, oh, I don't talk about it. And that's when we started talking about it. So all those decades prior to that, where I knew this guy extremely well, he never talked about it.
Wow.
Yeah. And now, yeah. Go ahead, Frank.
No, that's all right. I'll have a thought later.
You know, it's such a time because back then everyone did everything and didn't talk about it. Now people rescue a dog from a pound and they have to advertise to everyone what a hero they are for getting a free dog from the pound.
They liberated the dog.
Yes. God, could you imagine what your average 19-and-a-half-year-old would have to say when they got back from the Battle of the Bulge today, when they could get their hands on Twitter? I mean, it'd be nonstop.
He wouldn't get back.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point.
Well, that's a good point, too. All right, let me hit a sponsor here. Red Cap, comfort done right, making workwear and uniforms since 1923 for the essential workers, making our communities thrive. Clothing for many industries, automotive, culinary, manufacturing, waste management, oil block coveralls resist engine fluids. Oil just beads up and rolls right off. Latest project is for the road heroes, the truckers out there, the truckers tab, it's called. It's a $50,000 tab at Cracker Barrel to feed our long-haul truckers. Check it out at truckertab.com. You know, everyone is talking about the first line and the front row and the battlefields and everyone who's doing all the work. How about all the truckers that are supplying all the supplies to all these hospitals and all these markets and all the stuff you use every day? So you can donate as well. I did it. Go to truckertab.com. That's truckertab.com. Red Cap, workwear, done right. So what did you do when you got back, Frank, to the United States? You've been married for 73 years, I believe. So you got, You got married shortly after getting back. Did you?
When I got back from the war, I was downtown and with my little brother, and my wife to be walked across the street in front of us, and I asked him, "Who is that?" And he said, "That her name is Donna Millard. Her dad is a pastor, our new pastor." And I said, "Well, she went in that restaurant. Let's go down there." And he said, "All right." They said, "What for?" And I told him, I said, "Well, in as much as that's the lady I'm going to marry, I think we ought to get acquainted."
Oh, I love that so much. Man, whatever happened to the days of just being sure? Like, I saw that woman and I knew that was the one. Like, now it's like, he didn't text me back, so I'll move on.
That was how long you waited before you got married.
2 months later, we got married.
Wow.
We had four kids and had 8 grandkids and 16 great-grandkids.
Wow. Was this in Oklahoma?
In Oklahoma, and I had just had one wife, and I don't want another wife. I trained this one well, and that's the only one I need to train. And, let me update you just a little bit. When I was 15, my father died and left me the sole headbringer of the family. I had 2 little brothers, a sister, and my mother. And Social Security paid $18 a month. Yeah, that's not very much. In my day, it was a lot of money. But I didn't know how we was going to make out, so I heard that I could go to a town about 16 miles away, take a welding course, and then they'd ship me to California, and I could work in the shipyards, welding little Liberty ships together, which I took them up on it. And then I stayed there for almost 3 years. Then I went. I got 18, so I went to Fort Sill and joined the military, and ended up getting through the war. And I never got a scratch.
Did you work for Kaiser building those Liberty ships?
I sure did. Kaiser Wilhelm Shipyard.
Yeah, Kaiser. The same Kaiser Permanente.
I often wondered about that, but
it's the same place.
Ship so we can go over there and fight Kaiser Wilhelm's ex-people.
Kaiser Permanente, the hospital, started from Kaiser Liberty ships, and they had so many employees that they had to open their own hospital. Like, they had to have. They had, you know, thousands of employees all welding and moving steel around and building those ships all simultaneously. And so you needed your own hospital, essentially.
I'll be damned.
And they had their own hospital. And then I guess when the war ended, there was no more Liberty ships to build. None of the, you know, Greyhound sort of Tom Hanksy ships that he was, you know, he was defending
I came home with one of those Liberty ships.
Oh, you did?
I said, "God, don't let this be one I have to be that bill."
Yeah. So they stopped building troop transports and transport ships and got into the hospital business, I guess.
Wow.
Yeah, I guess so.
Diversified.
Yeah.
I have a post-war question for Frank. Frank, I don't know the answer to this, and maybe it's no, but were you ever fortunate enough to come in contact with any of some of the people who were held at Dachau? Did you ever have any interaction? Did you ever meet anybody? I mean, that's a pretty powerful thing, I imagine.
Well, my daughter and my wife both went back to Germany and went through the old Dachau plant. That what was open to the public, they went back and went through it. I didn't want to see it.
Sure.
I didn't see it anymore. I couldn't get it out of my head anyhow. So I didn't have any desire at all to see it.
Yeah. What would be the reason?
Understandable.
Yeah.
Souvenirs from the prison that I'd picked up there, and I gave them to my doctor, which is a Jew, and he thought I'd give him some diamonds. Because he said, "These are not going on my desk. They're going in the
memorial.
The synagogue.
Wow. So he took them, put them in the synagogue with my name on them.
Wow.
That was great. I enjoyed that.
But if you read the book,
you'll find in the last part of the book that Frank's daughter traced the ancestry of his family and discovered that his grandmother was Jewish, and that the Jewish, you know, settlement that was very close to Dachau had his ancestors. So there was a possibility that when he was saving those prisoners of war, he could have been feeding his own relatives.
Yeah.
Wow. I got goosebumps.
It's that whole...
That's why people go.
That's right.
That whole...
No kidding.
The whole part where Hitler is waging a war against the entire world and into genocide simultaneously is so insane if you think about it. The fact that he was attempting to do... Well, first off, you know, Germany's not that big. The world is pretty big. The notion that Germany would just basically wage war against the world, I know they had Italy and then Japan was in the Pacific theater, but the idea that you would simultaneously try to do both these things when it was already stacked against you just to win the war against the world is proves what a complete nut job he was. Like it was strategically, it's a horrible idea to
waste of resources.
Think about so many resources into just this evil act that doesn't get you the war won at all. Frank, had you even heard, when was the first time you'd heard about these concentration camps?
Well, when I was just a kid, like 15, 16 years old, in my hometown, when they attacked Pearl Harbor, some words came out then about Dachau and all that. I mean, these concentration camps. And Chinese, I think, had a lot of that going on.
So you were aware of it when you were stateside?
Oh, yeah, and we looked at it in school, and the newspapers that would come out, and it showed a little Chinese boy sitting on the ground crying in a crowded street, and it was pathetic.
But the German version of it, had you heard about that stateside?
I can't. I'm with you. I don't know why they would be so dumb, as the war was going on as it was. And they were already losing the war. And when they run out, it's my opinion that when they run out of gasoline, the war was over.
Right. Well, they should have got the Green New Deal going earlier on and had some wind and solar and renewables. It could still be fighting today. The book is called I Marched with Patton, a firsthand account of World War II, alongside one of the U.S. Army's greatest generals. It'll be available October 20th, but you can pre-order it today on Amazon and get a gripping firsthand account of World War II from someone who is there. Frank, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, sir.
And thanks, Robert, for filling in some of the spots in between.
Well, we appreciate being with you.
And I think we're going to talk to Frank on a take a knee coming up, right? So we'll get into more details with Frank. So Frank Sisson, hang on hold there, and I think we'll talk to you about take a knee off the air. And let me just hit LifeLock here. Certain behaviors make you more vulnerable to identity theft, like using the same password on every account and oversharing personal information on social media. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. Every day we put our info at risk when we put our info up on the internet. You need to protect yourself. You could miss certain threats by just monitoring your credit alone. Good thing there's LifeLock. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. If they detect your info, they will send you an alert. It's almost 2021, people. Protect yourself with LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but you can find out if your information is on the dark web. Get your free dark web scan at LifeLock.com/scan. Pick the plan that's right for you and save up to 25% off your first year with promo code Adam. That's a free scan at LifeLock.com/scan and 25% off with promo code Adam.
All right, we'll take
Adam, I'm sorry, sorry to interrupt, but real quick, didn't you interview a female concentration camp survivor for Take a Knee, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago or something like that?
Yes.
It's a long shot. You should figure out, you know, where she was, and you never know.
We could probably suss that out. Max Pata's not around this week, so we're a little shorthanded, but yes.
I meant before he comes in for a Take a Knee, or if it's possible.
A good call, and yes, I did several years ago talk to a female survivor, one of the camps, but I can't recall which one it was. I don't know if it's Dachau or not. Well, anyway, good suggestion. We'll look into it. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with Jeff Cesario, and we'll do all balls, all sports right after this.
It's time to break down the game film and look at the X's and O's, the KOs and the O-Nos from the world of sports. BetOnline presents All Balls, All Sports.
Let's dive into the BetOnline headlines. Baseball playoffs. Dodgers win 6-5. They go up with the Padres 2-0. Super tension. This could be the next great rivalry. Cody Bellinger's home run robbing catch off Fernando Tatis Jr. ignites bad Manny Machado. Dodgers pitcher Brustar Graterol celebrated Bellinger's catch. And Machado got pissed at that and unleashed a flurry of FUs, which in an empty ballpark could be heard down at the Arlington Walgreens. It was pretty funny. And
it echoed a bit.
I think we have footage of this.
Machado had already hit one home run, I think. This is the deepest part of the track. The deepest part of the ballpark.
Have a special postseason this year.
He threw his mitt down.
I don't know about this. Throw his glove. Bat flip, glove flip. Wow.
Did they have to play the music, though? That's insulting.
A kiss over to Manny Machado, who didn't like him throwing the glove.
Yeah, Manny's pissed.
You.
The, you know, it's crazy because, you know, if the ball travels another 2 or 3 inches, it's a home run. Mm-hmm. But he also hit it to the deepest part you could go. Right. I mean, you could go down the line. I'm saying this for Gina Grad's edification. But you probably go down the line. It's 336 feet, 328, 333, whatever it is. It's 3-something, 330-something. But you go straight away center, it's 407. So you can just add about 70 feet to how much further you have to hit it. Then, of course, it's going out of the ballpark, and Cody goes up, gets a good jump, and literally pulls it back. But if you think about that hit, if you hit it anywhere else in the ballpark, it clears the fence by 30, 40, 50 feet. But he hit it at dead center,
right,
and it got taken apart. Now, I get the part where the pitcher celebrates. I mean, because you would celebrate that. You had a home run robbed, and that saved you a run and blah, blah, blah. I don't get the part where you have to taunt the guy who hit the ball. And it's not really a taunt. It's not really a taunt. Was he taunting him?
No, what happened was Machado started to yak at Graterol, and it was Fernando Tatis Jr. who hit the ball and got robbed. Machado was in the on-deck circle.
Oh,
he did a home run earlier in the game
he was
and flipped his bat like he was a baton twirler. It was like a celebration of a triple quad lutz, then the bat finally drops off. So he's done his share of celebrating in the game. So Graterol throws his hat and his glove, and Machado starts heckling him, and that's when Graterol turns around and waves bye-bye to him.
All right, number one, the pitcher celebrated a bit excessively. I think we can all agree on that. Number two, you have no business celebrating. You just got a ball crushed 406.5 feet. The guy who's going to be celebrating is Cody Bellinger, rightfully. That's an amazing catch. Hey, the pitcher, you got bailed out. You're like, woo!
I think that's why he's celebrating. He's got, you know, he's still got a 0.00 ERA in the World Series. Thanks.
Yeah,
to
I mean, it's up there with the field goal kicker missing the field goal and then the defense, you know, celebrating sort of like as if you caused him to miss it. You know, yeah. It's like I don't think there should be it's if you're defensive back and the receiver drops the ball in the end zone, you shouldn't do that much celebrating. Even though it's not a touchdown and you're on the defense, it's still because he dropped the ball. It's an opposite sort of thing. I'm very consistent with this. I don't want you celebrating. Brian's right. The guy hit the ball 413 feet and the pitcher celebrating, but you need to celebrate your player. You need to celebrate that individual. You can't do a
yeah, but I think that's what he was doing. He threw his glove and his hat at the Dodger dugout. He wasn't pointing anything towards the
Brian's
Padres.
A Giants fan,
a
so
forehead
I think
wipe.
We know where this
I got
going.
Away with one thanks to Cody Bellinger.
Well,
and the great thing is these two teams are just yakking all year, and it hasn't stopped. I think this is going to supplant the Giants. I think this is going to be a killer rivalry for at least another 5 or 6 years. And the downside of the Dodgers is Kenley Jansen. He pitched more like Famke Janssen. He looked bad. He did not look good.
Is that a bad comparison?
They should be a rival because they're only 95 miles away. You know, they're in that same. You could get front door to front door in about an hour and 45 minutes. No traffic from San Diego to L.A. So good. All right. What else we got?
Well, in the NFL, Houston finally, for many people, fired their coach and GM Bill O'Brien on the heels of a huge shouting match with three-time Defensive Player of the Year J.J. Watt. And that apparently was the straw that broke the camel's back. O'Brien's out. Romeo Crennel is in as the interim, and I think that's his 19th stint as an interim coach. But O'Brien's had, just in the last year, seriously, he's let go Jadeveon Clowney. He was a superb defensive end. That gave him the best defensive end combination in the league with J.J. Watt and Clowney. DeAndre Hopkins left this year. He's crushing it in Arizona. They let DJ Reader go, big defensive tackle, and now they're last in run defense in the NFL. He signed Laremy Tunsil, a big, good offensive lineman, but he made some blunder in the contract that allowed Tunsil to come back in and really hold a gun to his head and pick up like the best contract ever for an offensive lineman in the league. So, and under that, apparently nobody's getting along with O'Brien in the locker room, plain and simple. And they're wasting a great young quarterback. Deshaun Watson, if not quite in the league with Mahomes and Jackson, is a half a notch underneath and probably has the potential to get up there with just a surrounding cast and a halfway decent defense.
No, I agree. He's a great athlete. He's just a click off of those guys, but with no surrounding cast, you're never going to get there. You have to have the offensive line to protect you. You have to have the deep threats, the guys who can stretch the field out. And it was funny. You said Reader was a defensive player, got dealt somewhere. And
he had a free agency. They let him go.
It was I don't know where Reader ended up. Do you know where he ended up?
Cincinnati.
Because I don't know. I had a very racist thought, which is I was staring at the back of the Cincinnati defense, and Reader was standing right next to a guy whose last name was Blackman. And I thought, well,
Blackman.
Blackman. It just said Blackman. Yeah. And I was like, well, one of those two things is very accurate. I'm not sure about the other. But it was Reader, just I like to read, name is right next to Blackman, who's on the line as well. I think there must be a Blackman and a Reader on the same
Imagine winding up in Cincinnati and thinking to yourself, wow, I dodged a bullet not having to stay in Houston. I mean, that's pretty
That's a referendum.
Bad.
I know. Yes. And Houston was really getting close to being an elite team a few years ago, and it just wheels have come. They've them and and the Atlanta Falcons have just turned into one of those. God, we were right up at the top of the leaderboard, and now it's just abysmal.
Yeah.
And these teams are good. Like, they have a lot of potential, and for whatever reason, there's a stumbling block. Like, think about the Jaguars of, like, 2 years ago. They went to the AFC Championship game. That was a damn good team. Just couldn't get over the hump. There's a stumbling block.
The Atlanta Falcons, I think I said it before, the Atlanta Falcons, after they blew that lead to the Patriots in the Super Bowl, was like a fighter who just was knocked out in the second round in devastating fashion and just never got their mojo back. Like, was never, you know, they were 31-0, devastating knockout, and became a journeyman tomato can right after that. Like, just so devastated. How could you get over that Super Bowl loss if you're the Atlanta Falcons with no Super Bowl wins in your franchise history, playing the vaunted Patriots and Bill Belichick and Tom Brady and dominating them for three quarters? Like, how do you ever get over that loss? It's like a heavyweight just getting knocked out in the second round, just losing all your swagger, your confidence, just never being the same fighter. That is going to take, it's going to take 20 years for that franchise to get past that fucking episode. That they were violently assaulted by the side of the road. Like, they're so psychologically damaged by what happened in that primered van that autumn night that they'll never be back again. They're devastated.
They're going to save this. Go ahead.
Sorry.
No, I'm done.
Save this exact paragraph for next week when Atlanta's Dan Quinn probably gets fired. It was kind of a race to the finish between O'Brien and Quinn to see who was going to lose their job first.
And Adam Gase is still employed.
Yeah, the Jets.
Well, but let me tell you about the Jets and why you want to be the Jets, because I used to talk about this with my buddy Kevin Hench, who does all the sitcoms now. Everyone back in the day, it's like, I'm going to be Thursday night, you know, I'm going to be right after Seinfeld or right before Friends or whatever. And it's like, no, you don't. You want to be Friday at 9 o'clock where no one cares and no one knows you're even on TV, you know, like you want to coach the Jets where nobody cares if you win. Yeah. Nobody ever wins. There's no scrutiny. You go 0-4 with the you start fucking up with Atlanta and Houston, and everyone wants to know what's happening. Like, what's wrong? We got to fix this. We got to make a move. Yeah, the Jets, they're sub 500 every year. Who cares? Right?
7-9 keeps your job at the Jets.
Yeah. That's Friday night, you know, after, step by step or whatever. I used to laugh all the time, you know. Suzanne Summers had a primetime sitcom, but it was on Friday night.
Yeah, with Patrick Duffy.
With Patrick Duffy. That thing was on like 7 or 8 seasons. No one even knew she was on TV. Like, they didn't, no scrutiny, no ratings, no nothing. Just hammering paychecks on Friday nights.
Well, let's stay in the NFL. This is quite interesting. The Washington Football Club benched their young quarterback, Dwayne Haskins. This team's had 30 starting quarterbacks in the last 27 years. They've wasted Robert Griffin Jr., Jason Campbell, Patrick Ramsey, Heath Shuler. That's just in the last like 5 years. Haskins only played in 11 games under three different coaches: Jay Gruden, Bill Callahan, the cursed interim coach, and Ron Rivera. He's got less than 350 pass attempts, and they just put him to third string. They didn't even drop him to second string.
Insulting.
Yeah, that's how much they've decided they're going another direction with a kid.
Behind Alex Smith, who may not have two legs.
Right.
Yeah, right. And horrible offensive line. He has zero weapons. You know, they just have not given this kid a shot, and I think it's, you know, indicative of a franchise that's dysfunctional from the head down. They just cannot get it right in Washington. You know, it took them 6 months to regroove their nickname to Washington Football Team. That's the best they could. I mean, you know, they should be driving an Uber like tonight, that entire front office. I don't get this franchise.
And again, Gina doesn't follow the sport, but the Washington Redskins of yore were a vaunted franchise. Oh, a perennial, always there at the end, oh, in and out of Super Bowls, winning Super Bowls, always a great organization, you know, tons of Hall of Famers. And there were, you know, when the Dallas Cowboys would play the Washington Redskins, was always a big deal, many Super Bowl appearances. The notion that they've completely come undone it'd be like you think about one of your favorite like restaurants, like a chain restaurant. Like I love P.F. Chang's. Wherever I go, there's a P.F. Chang's. I always know what I'm going to get. It'd be like you going in there and them going, "We only have top ramen and a can of beets. Like we got nothing anymore." And you go, "Oh, how about what do you got on tap? We got nothing on tap. We got a Natty Light. It's warm. We don't have refrigeration." Like you'd go, "Like what happened? Like what happened? You guys used to be such a. My family loved this place. What happened? Like
so, who's to blame?
It goes when it goes bad. It can go bad pretty quickly. Yes, Brian.
No, the easy answer is Dan Snyder. He's the owner of the team and. I don't think a lot of Redskins fans like him. That said, I was shocked at him. It was 10, 12 years ago. I read an article about the most valuable sports franchises. Like, sports franchises have a different value. The Redskins were the most valuable sports franchise in the NFL at the time. I think they've been overtaken by a team or two, but that was shocking to me. They were a marquee team.
And like you say, historically important, the first black quarterback to win a Super Bowl.
Yep.
Doug Williams, they had great coaches, they had great players. They always competed hard for the division and the league title. So I hate to say it, I think it is Snyder. I think you get an owner who comes in, same dough as the last owner, doesn't know how to spend it.
They're you know. Not only first black quarterback, but they're a team that before other teams had black quarterbacks, not the first, but I mean, you had a black quarterback and – a speedy white running back who dominates. So you had a
Riggins?
White running back and Riggins. Yeah, that guy was a sprinter. In
I don't
Kansas.
Know if he was speed. No, Riggins was more of a bowling.
No, I don't want to embarrass you.
Yeah, he was a power.
I do not want to embarrass you, but he had the Kansas State 100-yard dash record.
Really?
Well, oh, how many people live in Kansas?
Only the fast ones.
Once Gina left, took her record.
That's true.
He was a big, he was a big bruising dude, but he had wheels. That was the whole thing about Riggins. Riggins was a Kansas State record holder for the 100-yard dash or 100-meter dash, whatever it was. I mean, you can look it up, Kalen, but that was the thing about him. He was this big bruising guy, but he had breakaway speed. All right, let me hit... Bet Online. Football's it's in full swing. I think we've been talking about that. You might not be able to go to the game, but you can get in on the game, get in on the action. Sunday game coming up. We got Raiders at Chiefs. We got Eagles at Steelers, Giants at Cowboys, Broncos at Patriots, Vikings at Seahawks, Dolphins are at the 49ers. More options to wager than anywhere online, from spreads and totals to props. Get in on season opening bonuses and wager on division and championship futures as well. Head to BetOnline today. Take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Visit betonline.ag for our exclusive partner, Podcast One. Don't forget promo code Podcast One for your sign-up bonus today. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Well, while we're here, let's check the Bet Online line from Bet Online. This week's Bet Online NFL Pick'em Pool. Here we go. Raiders at Kansas City Chiefs. Adam and I both took the Chiefs. Denver Broncos at New England Patriots. We both took the Pats. Eagles at Steelers. We both took the Steelers. Giants at Cowboys. We both took the Cowboys. Bills at Tennessee. Adam took the Bills. I took the Titans. And I don't know why. our current standings, Chris Myers, who we just had on the show, leading the Podcast One standings with 12 points, with Chris Horwoodell, also has 12 points. Chael Sonnen, the grappler dude, 11 points. Jim Beaver, 11 points. I'm holding down third with 10 points. Shaq's got 9. Adam, you're in sixth with 8. And then there's two guys who just started last week who have 3 points and 2 points. And I'll spare them mentioning their names until they bring those point totals up, for God's sake. That's ridiculous.
Kalen.
That's the Bet Online line. And I'm Jeff Cesario for All Balls, All Sports.
All Balls, All Sports. Presented by Bet Online, your online sportsbook expert.
John Riggins, did he have the Kansas State high school sprint?
He won the 2 years in a row. He won the high school 100-yard dash, 9.8 seconds.
A fucking guy could fly. I mean, for a big dude running a 9.8 in high school,
yeah, that's actually incredible.
He could fly for a big dude.
2 years
I'll give
in a row.
That.
Don't revise it, Jeff. He could fucking fly the Kansas State 2 years running high school 100-yard.
How many people are in Kansas? 800,000? Come on.
The stopwatch doesn't lie, man. 9.8. You're running a sub-10 in high school. That, by the way, he was on a dirt track back then. You know, that wasn't...
well, come on.
It wasn't sprung.
No, now it's all polycarbonate, you know, recycled truck tires, you know. You've got him running through
wheat fields and,
lighting
them on fire with his blazing speed.
All right, let's see. Stockton, California. I'm going to be out there at the Brookside Country Club. That'll be this Monday, so come on out and say hi. And Lafayette, Louisiana, Cajun Dome, Saturday. October 24th, doing live pod there. Drew's going to come into the live pod, and then we'll do a stand-up show out there as well. I'm your emotional support animal. Sure, you can get that on Amazon and leave a review. And until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Frank Sisson and Jeff and Gina and Bald saying mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Thanks to our sponsor, Bet Online. And leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Also, pick up Adam's new book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. It's available everywhere. Get the links at adamcarolla.com.
You know, it's really scary. Just see how much you could have been saving on your car insurance by switching to GEICO. Almost as scary as that homemade elf costume your mom made you wear in junior high school. GEICO can't erase the memory of tripping down the hallway in pointy shoes, but they could save you 15% or more on your car insurance. Stop waking up at night in a cold sweat, wondering what happened to that green onesie. Just switch to GEICO and save 15 minutes. You could be saving 15% or more on your car insurance.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.